everything old is new again, and I've been playing a new recreation of an old game called Time Splitters.
That name is familiar to me, but I can't remember why.
GameCube?
GameCube. It was on the GameCube. It was on the PlayStation 2, I think, the first game as well, around its launch. So I think it was quite big then because it was one of the first major games. But where it originated from is it was made by some of the developers who worked on GoldenEye 007 and Perfect Dark on the N64 when they worked at Rare. They then left and formed a studio called Free Radical, who made Time Splitters.
Huh.
And what is the genre and premise of this game?
Genre is easy. It's a first-person shooter. Premise is a bit more complicated. It's always been a bit of a vague thing. There wasn't really a story as such until the third game in the series. But essentially, the main story mode involves you going through levels that are set in different places and different times. You fight your way through the level with guns and you get some sort of artifact and you run out. And as you run out, it's invaded. The level is invaded by the time splitters who teleport in and try and stop you escaping. But alongside this, there are other modes which add to the flavour and the character of what makes a Time Splitters game. Like, so there's an arcade mode, which is your classic, you know, deathmatch, but they have some bizarre rules, like the more times you shoot someone, the smaller they get, so they get like a handicap, they're harder to hit and things like that. And then they have challenge mode, which is like little set pieces within the levels from the game, but with just some completely bizarre scenarios. So in some of them, you're a monkey and you have to collect bananas in a sort of 3D Pac-Man style game. And in some of them, you have to smash every pane of glass on the level and things like that. They're quite brutal in the restrictions and in the time limits. And you get like gold, silver, bronze, platinum awards, but you have to be really like perfect on each level to get each award. So there's a lot of challenge and replay value to it.
I feel like the fact that the developers built GoldenEye, I don't think I ever played Perfect Dark, but GoldenEye is one of those games that's like hailed as like perfection. It is. I personally remember having a Nintendo 64 and coming in from the pub with my friends, and we would play that game for quite a while. And it was a moment having a really cool first person multiplayer in the same room game.
Yeah.
That, you know, it had good music, good sound effects, and it was from a franchise as well, so it had all of that. I don't know, did anything after that ever, any of the developers go on to make anything else that was like genre-defining or a moment in time? Time Splitters, of course. I don't know. I played Time Splitters, but I never really felt it was as good as it could have been.
Yeah, it was always a bit like, sort of some bits of it felt thrown together. It did take them a few iterations to get to what felt like a whole game rather than just a bunch of ideas. But what's happened since then, the original company folded and got sold off to Crytek, mm-hmm. who made Crysis and the CryEngine. And from there, they didn't really want to do anything with it. So some independent developers managed to convince them to let them build a fan game using the original IP. And they actually got access at first to the original engine and assets. And from there, over an intervening period of years and a long drama you can read about on the website, comes Time Splitters Rewind, which is a complete fan recreation of the game from scratch by now. So they built a new game with content from all three of the original games recreated within them, which they've just released under what they're calling early access, but essentially a public beta at this point, with some of the content finished and a few rough edges, but very much playable and available to download for free.
So given that you've got this Time Splitters Rewind, there must have been something about the original game that attracted you to want to take a look at this. And I suppose what I want to know is, does this improve on the original concept significantly? Does it fill those gaps that Alan was talking about?
I think for me, it really fills the nostalgia gap as much as anything. You know, you can't really get a version of Time Splitters that you can play without digging out an old console and an old physical copy of the game. And unfortunately, I traded in my copy of Time Splitters 2 in order to buy Time Splitters 3 when it came out because I was, you know, 15 and I couldn't afford to have all of the games I wanted all the time like I can these days. So there's stuff from Time Splitters 2 which I'd love to play again but don't have access to, for example. I mean, in terms of improving on it, I don't think at the moment the goal is to improve on it. It's to recreate the original experience, right, but then add new content created by people who love the concept, essentially.
And is the graphical fidelity the same, like original textures, original models, that kind of stuff, or is it best, is it like, does it fit in with like a modern gaming aesthetic, or does it just look like a nostalgic game that's been recompiled for a new CPU?
From what I've played so far, it feels like a modern game.
Right.
It doesn't feel like I'm loading up a PS2 game from the past and running it in a shonky emulator.
Nothing wrong with that, though, is there? We don't judge.
Okay. But this is because they've not just recompiled the game. They have built a new game with the original game as a reference, essentially.
Right.
So they've remade the characters with modern graphics, but still with the same style. That's the thing. It's got a very distinctive style of how the character models are built and the shape everybody is and the way that they move. It's very distinctive and not really something you see in any other game, like the way they duck and move and shoot and fall down when they get killed. It's very Time Splitters, and they've recreated that quite well.
When I got rid of my Steam Deck, that made a gaping hole underneath my TV in the lounge. And in the cupboard, out of sight, is a GameCube, still down there with the power supply and the controllers and everything. I think I've only got one WaveBird, so one of us would have to sit on the floor, like old school children style, you know, sitting in front of the TV playing video games. But I think this weekend, I've got enough to do, Mark. Don't tempt me to get my GameCube back out again and have another play of Time Splitters. Oh my gosh.
Yes, interestingly, playing this on the Steam Deck, they do have instructions. It's built for Windows. They do have instructions for running it on the Steam Deck, which is really simple because you just go and download the zip file of the game, unzip it to a directory. It's got an executable in, and then you add that to Steam as a non-Steam game and tell it to use Proton as the compatibility layer, and it just runs. I think I need to do a bit of fiddling with the controls because they don't feel quite as responsive as I'd like. That's using it in controller mode, just with the basic default setup. So I might try it with mouse and keyboard emulation instead and see how that compares. But in terms of just being able to run it on the Steam Deck, it feels great. It looks great. It fits right in. So I was really impressed with that as well. So it's really just been released this week or maybe last week. So it's just out now, but hopefully they're going to get enough of a response and have enough time to dedicate to it that they'll keep going and get towards what they consider a final release of it. I'm very much looking forward to see how it goes.
I entered a coding contest that I cannot win.
Oh, don't be so hard on yourself.
You know, not a developer and all that. Actually, there's a good reason why I can't win. Well, there's a couple of good reasons why I can't win. So this is a contest that was kicked off by Martin's employer, ChainGuard, and it's a fun like coding challenge. The prize is, I didn't even look because I know I can't win. I think it's $1,000 to a charity of your choice, to the winner's charity of choice. Right. So it's a little marketing exercise for ChainGuard. It's a bit of fun. It's not to be taken seriously, but of course I took it quite seriously. It's all over by the time you listen to this, because we're recording while the event is going on. And the event is split into three rounds, and you have to make it through each round to get to the next round so that you can participate. I mean, even if I don't get through to the other rounds, I might still participate because there's nothing stopping me knowing what the theme is for the rounds, because each round has a different theme. And the first round started at the beginning of December, and it was to make an app the marketing conceit is use some ChainGuard technology, so secure containers. And there's some other things that they list that, hey, if you use these other things or use our logo and, like, you know, the mascot, what's his name? Inky? Is it, yeah, Inky? Yeah. Then, you know, we won't be offended if you do that. And, you know, maybe that'll sway the judges. So that's one of the rules, is you have to use this ChainGuard components somewhere, which is easy to fulfill because the container technology is useful because you can use Docker and, you know, use these as a base for your secure container. So that's an easy given. But the tricky part is for round one, they want you to develop an app that only uses emoji for the user interface. So no words can appear anywhere.
Right.
I did ask for clarification in there, in the contest Slack, because you know the little letters that are in emoji,
yeah,
which are the two letters that you use when you're doing a flag. So if you do like the little U and the little S, you get an American flag will pop up. If you put spaces between them, you can actually spell anything out. And so you could design a user interface which has words in it, but is emoji. Right. And that fulfills the rules, which, and it's technically correct, which, as we all know, is best correct. And I asked that. And I was only asking for a joke, but I did think about it because I did develop a thing where not having any words in the user interface at all is a bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I developed a mapping navigation application. Now, if you think about a navigation application, typically, you're going to need, I don't know, things like the names of roads or the names of places you're going,
yep.
Towns, like yep. Turn left, you know, that kind of stuff. The signs like left and right and forward, and you can get away with arrows for those things.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, it's I went for mapping application because I thought I would aim high and develop something. And also, you know, because I've done that nerdy day trips, I have a little bit of experience of rendering maps in a web browser. So I thought, well, you know,
yeah, that's smart.
Leverage that existing knowledge that I already have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're not just using a map emoji and then trying to navigate people around that.
There is a map emoji in there, but it's like an interstitial between one stage and the next when it's loading something, and it kind of sits there and bounces, but it's so fast, you probably won't see it. Yeah.
Because one question I was going to ask was, you know, without words, how do you express concepts like loading to the user?
That is a great question. So what I went for was when you first load it, it shows a pin that, you know, push pin navigation thing. And I think that's like everyone knows that means location. And then it asks the browser for location access. Yeah. And I think it's a given if you know that this is a navigation app, you're going to need to provide location access because it's going to navigate you somewhere. And without that, it's a bit difficult. And there's no search option, as in you can't type in pub or restaurant or something like that.
Right.
So what I did was use a grid of emoji icons, which map to amenities in OpenStreetMap. And so I thought, well, what are the kind of amenities that people would search for? So obviously the first one is pub, and there's coffee shops, swimming pools, gyms, there's lots of different amenities. You get parks, and there's also toilets. Public toilets are in there. There's like 16 amenities. Yeah, like just the kind of things that you would, that in fact, if you look in Google Maps or Apple Maps, in fact, there's a little button, a shortcut for restaurants and coffee shops and stuff. So
and it has an icon.
Yeah. So I thought, that makes sense. So you basically just press a button, it finds them on the map. That's the first part of it, is you don't need words to express those things because the emojis kind of relate to those things.
So that UI of sort of popular things that you would want to find is brilliant, because when I travel for work and I go to a new city somewhere in the world, usually my searching in the maps is just bars near me, restaurants near me, library near me, you know, it's all of that sort of thing. It's not like I need to navigate vast different distances. I've already got there and I just want to find things nearby to go to get coffee and food and things.
That's a very good point. It only does walking navigation. It doesn't do cars, trains, planes or anything like that. So the idea is you're looking for things around you, which for me, given that I test it in central London, is really easy because there's one of everything nearby. Whereas when I test it at home and I do a search for swimming pools, it's a bit far between, like, especially given our local recreation center shut down and was bulldozed, flattened recently.
Go to the next town. Yeah.
Yes. And I limit the area, the radius, because I don't really want to show stuff that's miles away because you're not going to walk there, are you? So I do constrain how far it searches. But the goal is that it shows a bunch of them as the emojis on the map. So if you chose burger, which means like, you know, burger restaurant or whatever, it will show a bunch of burgers on the map. And then you tap one of them. And when you tap it, it then gets walking directions for you and shows a line on the map. And you then follow that line. You go walking and it updates dynamically. The little pin moves, which is you, the pin moves.
Right.
And if you deviate too far from the directions, it will recalculate. It like knows where the next point you should get to is. And if you like take a wrong turn or you go a long way round or something, or maybe there's closed pavement and you have to like cross over and go a different way or something, maybe you've been diverted, it will recalculate once it detects that you're a certain way away. And that was interesting to tune because I don't want it to keep recalculating constantly. Like if it thinks you've just like walked around like a, you know, an obstacle or something, I don't want it to constantly keep recalculating. I don't want it to spam the back end APIs. So yeah, I was quite pleased with how that turned out. And I made a little demo video this morning where I tested it. And that is the first and only time I've actually tested it. And I'd already submitted it to the contest. Because it was the only opportunity I had to test it was this morning, because I got off the train and walked from King's Cross Station to work. And I opened the app and pressed the coffee cup button, tapped on a coffee cup, and it navigated to me to conveniently our favorite coffee shop at work. It's directly opposite the building where I work. And so that was like convenient because that was the direction I was going. But it was nice that it found somewhere and the navigation worked. So I'm quite glad that the post-submission testing QA that I did, limited QA of like one, actually worked.
I was an early beta tester and it successfully navigated me from my office in Basingstoke to the coffee shop directly beneath where I was. But it did
amazing
also
what technology can
it
do.
It did also give me directions to the local cinema, because that which is within walking distance. So, you know, it found a few things. But like you say, because it's walking distance, there were things that I pressed on. I was like, why is it not finding anything? And I was like, oh, yeah, because you have to walk there.
Yeah, I was quite pleased. It's built with two containers. So yeah, I'm using ChainGuard's base container.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's Python on the back end and the front end is React. And the idea is that the React part is the thing that just renders all the map. And the map is using Leaflet.js. And the backend Python is a kind of proxy to the APIs that get called for like navigation, like figuring out which way you're going to walk and that kind of stuff. It can run locally on localhost in the two containers, but I've made a public version. I'll put a link in the show notes. It may or may not still be working by then. I don't know. But yeah, that's what it basically is under the hood.
And in terms of the actual experience and the use of emojis while you're navigating, is it just a pin floating around a map, or are there more emojis in play to help the user on their navigation journey?
Yes, confusingly, there is a little foot icon, which...
number of steps?
Yes, that's what it looks like it is, but it's not. It's feet, of course.
Ah.
And so it tells you a little arrow that tells you like how far to go in a particular direction. And when you get to that point, it moves on to the next direction, which is like, oh, now turn left and go for like, you know, 50 feet or something. And I added a settings button in the top right-hand corner on the main screen that lets you switch between feet and meters. And the icon for feet is a foot, and the icon for meters is like the metro blue circle with an M in it, a white M in it. So I use that for meters. Because like, what else am I going to use? There is a ruler, but I use that if a distance is more than 1,000 feet or a certain number of meters, it recalculates and puts it in miles, but it'll be fractions of miles, like 0.3 miles or something like that.
So a ruler is a mile.
A ruler is a mile, yes.
One of those mile-long rulers.
Yes. Shut up. How else are you going to render in an emoji the word mile? Like,
the foot-long ruler is a mile. And the foot-long foot is a feet.
It's feet, yes. Like, I could put two, I don't know, maybe there's an emoji that's 2 feet. Yeah, file a bug, Mark. it's open source. It was super fun, and I was really pleased that it worked, obviously. But it's actually quite simple. There's not a lot to it. And the APIs I'm getting more familiar with as I make these silly little things, like Nerdy Day Trips and like this, you know, I'm now starting to think maybe I could integrate this into Nerdy Day Trip. So you search for interesting nerdy things nearby, and it gives you walking directions to get there. Like, how about that? That might be interesting.
Mm, that is good. Now, at the outset, you said you'd entered this competition and you couldn't win it, but I don't think you've explained why you can't win this competition, because it sounds like you've got a killer entry here.
Yeah, I've got it in the bag, surely, says the guy who tested it after submission once. Yes. So the reason is, after I decided to enter the contest, I got chatting with someone at work, and then the stars aligned. And someone at ChainGuard contacted my CEO and said, can you be one of the judges on this contest? And so, as my boss is a judge, I think I should opt myself out of being allowed to win this thing, which I think is fair.
That's reasonable. Unfortunate, but reasonable.
Yeah, I gave a little lightning talk about it, about the development of it at work today during our demo day on a Thursday. We have lunch and learn kind of thing. And I did a presentation with some slides, and the slide where I showed that I was not going to be able to win this thing, I showed the judging panel for Britain's Got Talent and then superimposed my boss's face. And I thought, should I put it on David or Simon or one of the two girls in the middle? And then I thought, no, I'll put it on Simon. So I put the boss's head on Simon's body, which is fine. Not been fired yet. So that's good. And then gave a little demo, made a little video, and it's been a fun and interesting experience. And by the time you listen to this, maybe I'll have been put through to round two. Maybe I'll have been dropped by the wayside. Who knows?
And what's it called? Where can you get it? And where can you run it from?
That's a very good point. It's in my GitHub. It's open source, completely open source. It's on github.com/popey, and you'll find it in there. It's really near the top. I've deployed it, whether that will still be deployed or not, we will see. I've deployed it to a subdomain of popey.com. The actual thing is called Moji Nav, as in M-O-J-I, nav, navigation. MojiNav.popey.com. I did not register a domain for this because I'm pretty sure it's a short-lived project. I don't want to commit to maintaining this for 5 years. Come back to me in 5 years and ask me if I am still maintaining it. But yeah, it's just a bit of fun. I don't know if I'll carry on maintaining it. It's a bit of a laugh, but I've learned something along the way, so that's good.
In today's meander through the A to Z of modern Unix, we are stopping off at the letter T for Trippy, which is a network diagnostics tool.
Ooh, I like network diagnostics tools, but I'm always stuck on the old school stuff. Like, it takes me a while to get off of ifconfig and netcat and stuff.
Okay. Well, Trippy is going to get you off of traceroute and ping.
Ooh.
Yes. So in usual modern Unix style, the first indicator you can tell that this is modern Unix is it's written in Rust. So the first two rules are must be Rust or Go. So
you didn't need to say it. You didn't need to say it. We knew it was written in Rust.
And it has one of these modern TUI graphical interfaces. It's very pretty and it's very functional. And I think the first thing to point out before I get too carried away with how it looks and how it works is to say it is a genuine network diagnostics and analysis tool. So if you use things like ping and traceroute, or some of the newer versions of those tools to do like packet analysis and packet loss analysis and all that sort of thing, it's infinitely configurable in the way that you do sort of the protocol and packet and, you know, ports configuration. It can do everything you would need to do hard network diagnostics. But if you just want a very pretty ping with lots of great information, it does that too.
This feels like, you know, Dustin Kirkland, one of your colleagues, who many moons ago made Byobu and also on top of that made Hollywood, the thing that launches Byobu with a bunch of stuff going on in all the different windows. I feel like we could redo Hollywood, but with actual stuff, all of these tools running in each of the windows. Like, this would be great inside a terminal, like showing it shows a map. Yeah.
It would look good in one of those hacker scenes in a movie if you fired this up, because you instantly get a table of the hops in the trace route that's happening. It has the packet timing. It has little coloured orbs to denote the speed and health of the thing. And then at the bottom, there are bar graphs for the latency and the number of round trips and all of that sort of thing that's going on. And you can scroll through that list of hops and you can bring up additional information about them. And my favourite feature is you can bring up an ASCII, it's a Braille art representation of the map, and it does GeoIP plotting of the route through the network. So It's ridiculously pretty. It's very well done. It's a genuine network diagnostics tool. And some of my favorite features are you can actually start it and say, capture all the data in a markdown table. So it will just stream the data to a markdown table, which I like. But if you want something more useful, it has that same feature, but for CSV, JSON, and GraphViz as well. So you can actually sort of do all sorts of neat stuff with it. So when you want to configure what protocol you want to use, such as TCP instead of ICMP, it can do that and enable you to sidestep the problem where ICMP gets dropped by a lot of the major network providers now, and you get broken hops.
I have to say, I just saw a screenshot of that map you mentioned, and it instantly put me in mind of war games. I think every every text mode application needs to include a Braille art map of the world from now on.
I'm now wondering if that is a library, and can we make war games in a terminal now, the actual war games in a terminal, because that would be quite cool, especially because that renders at a higher resolution than the old 80 by 25 of the original film. So yeah.
I feel like you could do some sort of war game by like plotting routes with trace route between countries or something, like firing a missile by pinging someone's IP over there and watching it go across the map.
Yeah, maybe you do a version of war game which is blue team versus red team in an ASCII representation of a map.
It's compelling viewing. I've just had this GIF running constantly while you've been talking, and I just can't stop watching it. It's really rather good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrific. And if you've listened to that and you've said, oh, yeah, I would like a modern ping, but I don't need a whole network diagnostics tool. Well, I'll give you a little bonus. We'll just take a hop, skip and a jump down the alphabet to G in the alphabet of modern Unix, and we'll stop off at G-ping. And G-ping is ping, but with a graph. So it doesn't have all the network diagnostics tools, but you just run gping and whatever you would normally do with ping, and you get a nice Braille graph of the time and latency. And I alias ping to gping and have done for many years now, because it's much more fun than just seeing a bunch of numbers scroll past the screen.
And it does scroll sideways as well, this gping. I thought it was just going to do up and downy graphs and then stop, but it actually just moves like smooth scrolling. So this is just...
So there you go, Trippy and Gping, two great network diagnostics tools from the library of modern Unix.